The final tinies.
The finey tinies.
Welcome to the finey tinies.
Hello, and welcome to the final Tiny Plastic People podcast of the year. We spent the last year painting things, playing with them, and telling you why we think that's great. And here today we've got the editorial team from TPP, which is myself, Rich. We've got Drew.
Hello.
And we've got James.
Yo, yo.
So we're going to take this opportunity at the end of the year to have a bit of a chat about our first year. What went well, what didn't go well, what our plans for the future are. And we're going to intersperse that festively with some individual catch-ups we had from some of our contributors about what they enjoyed about the year and what they're looking forward to next year.
It turned out that 2020 Part 2, which was called 2021, was fine to do everything online in. We did it for 1 year. We continued doing it for another year.
Yeah,
it was great.
Just reaching out for new horizons of entertaining ourselves on the internet. No longer is it enough to just do hobby hangouts or play computer games. Now we must spread our opinions.
Exactly, like thin butter on toast.
Yeah.
Here comes some hot takes.
Melting.
We cried.
Well, I guess we don't really have much of a structure for what we'd like to say about TPP, but in no order in particular. James, how do you think it's been? How has year one gone?
I like running a website. It's fun and hard and other things, but it is generally good. It is a thing that we made as a little community, and it's very lovely to see it kind of come together as a place where people can have articles, they can have podcasts such as these, and it's generally just been like a really nice distraction from the world, and it's been like kind of good to have something which is adjacent to doing hobby, which isn't entirely doing that hobby. So it's more just like taking some time to talk about the things that are actually important, and also, yeah, thinking about the state of the hobby sort of thing, things at the same time as actually doing some hobby. And
yeah,
not making it just games and painting and building and stuff. It's always good to
keep going. It's nice to have the option when you don't feel like doing some painting or building to do something hobby adjacent that isn't going on a website and buying something to be delivered to your house. Backloading that hobby buzz by just purchasing something. You can, you know, go and edit an article or brainstorm an article, or, you know, do a podcast. Just talk about what you're enjoying or what you're not enjoying and why you're not. It's been pretty thrilling, really.
I'm particularly proud of the podcast as well. I really like the podcast. I think it's fun. I think it's good. So,
yeah.
Yes, because we didn't set out to do a podcast as a default. We set out with the sort of website in mind, and then the podcast grew off the back of it, really, didn't it?
I think if we look at our listenership and readership numbers, we're we're by no means anything other than the smallest of fry, but the podcast seems to get more universally a good reception than articles necessarily do. Like people have written and produced some amazing write-ups for us, and they individually seem very popular and go down well with people, but I'd say we maybe consistently get better podcast listener numbers than we do individual article reads, maybe. Maybe that's because the podcast's more general and consistent than, you know, not everyone's going to be interested in.
Yeah, and we kind of fell into a format as well doing it where we would ask. Well, we started out doing like test podcasts to make sure that it was a thing that people would like to do and people could actually do as well, with microphones and recording and Audacity and all that, and video calls, etc. And once people got used to that, that's when we started releasing the podcast as actually a thing. We actually have hidden episodes, which we never released and probably won't, because I can't remember where I put them.
There's probably some gems in there somewhere.
probably. Occasionally people do talk about that. Oh, yes, I talked about this on a test podcast. Do I have to talk about it again? It's like, yes, you do, because I'm not releasing that. So I think the format which we kind of fell into, where we asked people to actually bring subjects to the table which they were actually passionate about and want to talk about, and then cycle through it, I think that's a really good like sort of structure for a community podcast in particular. Like, we invite people from like our groups which we know and love to come on the podcast and talk about those things if they want to. And if they've brought up something on like our Discord channels and things and we think, hey, that's worth having a conversation about, then it's like an open format to do that.
It's definitely much easier to have those conversations in person, even if that's a video call in-person conversation for a recording. It's definitely easier than losing some nuance in the text chat, right? So it's a good opportunity for people to get their thoughts down on paper in a controlled environment. Mostly controlled.
I mean, you can't interrupt it with just a gif of Captain Holt saying vindication or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the advantage, or certainly the, you know, the goal of Tiny Plastic People was to come out and provide quite a sort of wide range of voices, wasn't it? It's not a sort of, you know, we're not unified, I don't think, in any particular way we like to talk about the hobby or way we like to experience in the hobby. And that shows in both the articles and also the sort of podcast, that it's, you know, particularly with the rotating host format of the podcast, it's a chance for lots of different people to have a say and quite a few different sort of points of view to be expressed, I guess.
Yeah. And I think we were very keen with all of it that it didn't and doesn't become just like an extension of ourselves as us three and previous editorial team members that we've had as well, who've moved on to bigger and brighter things. We don't just want it to be like our blog, what we let some other people write on. It's it's supposed to be this truly collaborative, anyone can do it thing.
You know, without going into sort of the details, there's obviously quite a lot of talk at the moment in the sort of the hobby sphere, I suppose, about sort of, I don't know, the kind of things that go on and how things are presented. And I think it is important to have platforms that do kind of give people a chance to talk about stuff in a kind of a meaningful way that isn't just sort of an echo chamber, I suppose.
Absolutely. I feel like we've got a pretty strong website position or team position on a political curve, at least when it comes to things like fascism in hobby. But you see all the time on social media, there are so many positions even within that quarter of an alignment chart as to how things should be presented and how things should be interpreted, that there's so much room for discussion still. And yeah, creating that room rather than just saying, we think this, bye, tune in next week, is really, really good, I think.
Yeah, very true. It's sort of, and you know, and even on the spectrum as well of sort of between some narrative and competitive play and stuff. I mean, I think of us three, you're maybe the most competitive of the players, which also competitive scene players.
A damning indictment, if ever there was one.
But, you know, certainly we've had people on the site who are quite sort of involved in, I was going to say War Cry, which is a sign of how much I know about the sort of more competitive games. Underworlds is what I was thinking for. We've had some sort of articles by quite a few sort of Underworlds players. And
we've had
a focus on that side of things.
We've had chimps, competitive or more competitively minded Age of Sigmar articles as well. And then you also have the other end of things where it's someone explaining they've built their army because of a narrative that they've created in their head, and that's why it exists and looks like this. And yeah, again, it's great to sort of non-critically present both of those viewpoints as valid. And I mean, they don't have to be opposing viewpoints by any means, and they're certainly not in some of the people I know, but I think things get boiled down a lot to, are you gaming or narrative.
Yes, it's nice to have a pigeonhole, isn't it, that you can just conveniently pop everything into. Shall we get on to a more festive bent and maybe introduce our first set of special guests? Or
yeah, let's do it.
So I sat down with Tom G and Joseph earlier this week, and we caught up about their hobby highlights and such. So over to past James, maybe. Okay, well, I don't know who invited you to, so tell me who you are and why you are here.
I'm Tom, also known as Respectable Geek.
And I'm Joseph, also known as Game Scholar.
Well, it sounds like you fine gentlemen would need to know that I'm James, and I'm going to introduce you to the rest of the Tiny Plastic People Towers. But again, because of COVID security, you get to look at them over there having fun. And I guess that I'll entertain you for a bit and we'll discuss things about, I don't know, do you like Warhammer?
Well, I've been on a podcast about Warhammer several times, so I'd hope so.
I like the meme of Henry Cavill going, "It's Warhammer, Graham."
Excellent. And I can stop being quite so passive-aggressive, which it turns out is the only thing that occurs when I have to riff Christmas parties off the top of my head. It's just becoming an asshole, it seems. Anyway, I guess this is the time in which we talk about things that happened in this year of 2021 and such and sorts. So where shall we begin with these things? We have some vague questions which we can talk around. Things like, what is the favourite thing you've done this year? What highlights do you have from games and things? What are your releases of the year? And do you have any plans? So that's a lot to suddenly unpack all at once. So, Tom, tell us, what's been your hobby highlight of this year?
Well, I think I should first make an honourable mention to my Imperial Knights conversion, which I've talked about on the podcast before, the Knights Castellan, where I decided to make it twice as tall as it was previously by putting a diorama on top of it with a hollow table and everything, which I was really proud of, and it's my largest model. But I think my actual highlight of the year, painting and modelling-wise, was right at the start of the year. I did a New Year, New Army challenge. And I decided to paint an entire Night Haunt army in January. And that took me about 24 hours over the course of the month to paint 75 models. And I've never really done speed painting before, so it was a bit out of my normal comfort zone of trying to do a whole load of models really quickly to a standard I was happy with for the tabletop rather than for... I'm never someone who's going to do models for winning competitions or anything. But thinking, can I do this quickly and effectively and do this all this month? And I did. And I think I worked out I spent an average of about 10 minutes per model, which dry brushing and contrast paints, basically. And the Night Haunt models in particular are so good for just... I basically painted them black, dry brushed them white, and then put the two... special Night Haunt paints over the top of them, and then did a bit more highlighting and a bit of details in places, and it looks really effective on the table. As someone who's never really completed armies, it was really satisfying to go, wait, I've just done a huge number of models here, and that's actually achievable, and they look good. They are nice on the table. I haven't actually used them in a battle yet. I need to play Age of Sigmar at some point, and I also need to add some more models, because Mortal Realms magazine kept sending me more Night Haunt. It's a terrible, terrible place to be.
I mean, how awful.
Yeah, how dare they keep sending me more models. And there's all these nice undead being released this year as well. So I need to do more with them at some point. But as a challenge, it was just really nice.
Joseph, you ahead.
So I was thinking about, you know, we're coming up towards the end of the year as it approaches, thinking, what did I complete this year? And I realized a lot of what I completed this year, I have the terrible idea of I should go back to it and improve it. So I have some completed goblins, but I'm going to go back and do more with the completed goblins because I decided they should be rustier, mainly. More rust.
I mean, everything could be rustier.
Yeah.
I'm all in on that.
So I guess what I finished is I did manage to finish some Space Marines. I think they are done. An army isn't done, but individual squads are done. Just needs a bit more expanding. But I think, like, in terms of like hobby highlight, some of my hobby highlight is just like seeing some of the things that's happened in other people's hobby, especially like seeing all the weird little projects that have been like ticking along the background of the community. Cause something kind of take off, like Turnip, Sludge, World War Wield, that sort of thing. Just kind of suddenly going, oh, they're popular now. On a small miniature game scale, at least. But, you know, it's kind of cool to see these things sort of take off and then go, oh, do I want to buy, like, 50 quid's worth of Napoleonics and just stick some tree bit to them?
Dangerous.
Sounds like you do. Like, that thought seems to be everywhere at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's definitely in my head. I don't know quite how to rectify it, other than that I would definitely be buying them to turn them into little turnip people. So...
I'm tempted by Sludge, because then I can have a weird republic of horrible oil people.
They're all like Baron Harkonnen coming out of the oil.
Yes. Oh, and then it's Dune as well, and we all know how... anyone who's heard me on previous podcasts knows that I will bring up Dune.
It's been done. It's occurred.
James has broken the Dune seal.
The Dune seal is open. Let's now talk about House Atreides.
There's lots of really good 3D printed Fremen and Saudakar Dune 2021 miniatures on Instagram. And every time I see them, it's a different hobbyist. So it's like there's at least four or five people who I follow on Instagram alone doing really cool 3D printed Dune minis.
I'm going to actually jump in and say I've seen a lot more 3D printing this year. A lot more. You know how everyone was saying that it's not really that much, but I've seen more and more STL files of actually stuff where I'm like, that's actually pretty cool. Just the other day I was looking at someone had created like a Kickstarter for like Zone Mortalis bits which fit into the Necromunda Zone Mortalis to give it a bit more, you know, extra bits and bobs. And I was like, ooh, that's dangerous stuff. That's like catnip to me.
Yeah, because what I love about 3D printing at the moment that people are doing is the extra bits, the add-ons. So it's like the custom shoulder pads people make nowadays for Space Marines is the obvious example, but as you say, gubbins for terrain, just little different heads, different bits, add-ons to what we've already got. Because I always felt that the quite uncomfortable, I think, with this sort of, oh yes, 3D printing will just replace the what is coming out of Games Workshop and the other miniatures companies, and oh, we'll just recreate that, and that's not interesting to me. I want to see what people can create themselves rather than copying someone else or stealing from other people, frankly. But there's a lot of good stuff that I'd be willing to support and get a printer for if I actually had somewhere to put it. That is just the, here's a thing I felt was missing and I'd like to put out there. And I think that's much more exciting to me.
Yeah, it's very much like it's really become a... I'm trying to think of the right word for it. It's the... I was going to say addendum. I don't think it's an addendum to hobbying, but I guess it's kind of is. I don't know, maybe it is. It's like the...
Sprinkling.
It's like... It's an expansion. Yeah,
exactly. It's like a plug-in for your hobby software, and it creates just that little bit more like exciting and personalization, which is what loads of people are after anyway. It's just a different way of achieving that. So
very much not to downplay the people who've been doing 3D printing for longer, because it probably literally is just, I did not see the cool stuff.
Yeah.
It really feels that like the quality of 3D printing has caught up to like small manufacturer resin or small manufacturer metal. Whereas before there was a tendency for it to be either very Ed Sheeran in that one photo knockoff Space Marines, or like theoretically well produced, but why does that lizard have breasts?
It's a question we all ask.
It really feels like it's broken away from that. Like Saint Decent is doing a load of really cool 3D printed and then stuff, because they do a lot of the turnip bodies and helmets.
yes, it's been really nice to see on the community side of things, like the more smaller games, like more niche games or things like that, just like the echo chambers in which they exist in Instagram with their hashtags and things are actually suddenly much larger echo chambers with things, and those echo chambers are pulling in people from around the hobby more and more to create potentially the same echo chamber as everyone else, but it's a fun place to be, so hey, that's how the internet works. So.
Yeah, because places like Instagram are very good for sharing things, thinking, oh, that's something I haven't seen before, and I think there's also good hobby websites out there which do just collate things from all over the place and go, oh, yeah, this is something cool. You go, oh, that looks cool. Or you're on a Discord because someone goes, oh, look at this, that's cool. And you go, oh, that's dangerous. Mm-hmm. Is that my next project?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll sit there. Anyway, what about events? Have either of you actually been to many events this year?
Well, not...
I have not.
Not events, I mean...
Or like, I guess game highlights of the year, because events didn't really start until...
I mean, I did go
to... say June?
I mean, I did go to a very exclusive event in June, actually, in my back garden.
That's the best kind of event for this year, I think.
Yeah. I hosted a Game of Apocalypse in the back garden for me and a few friends, because Apocalypse is one of my favourite Games Workshop systems, and... It was my birthday, so I thought, yeah, let's have a nice Game of Apocalypse. And there's a few things I'd do differently next time, but hopefully there will be a next time. But just getting large numbers of models out on the table and throwing them, well, not literally throwing them at each other, but throwing them across the board at each other, and is a lot of fun and a great way to spend an afternoon. And with the current set of Apocalypse rules, which I highly recommend to anyone who can still get their hands on them, you can actually do it in a few hours over the course of a day, rather than that size of game taking a week. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. I do need to run it again at some point, because I've now got an extra knight to put into onto the battlefield. And as much as I'd like to use my knights in main 40k, it sometimes feels a bit cruel. I don't often have that size of game, so the main arena for them is going to be Apocalypse.
Yeah, they're perfectly suited for the really, really big games. And Apocalypse is so good. It's such a shame that there's not been... I'm sure probably this time next year we'll be talking about, oh, wasn't it great that Apocalypse 2 came out? Because, like, Kill Team 2, it seems like the next step, probably a new version of Apocalypse. I don't know how well it did, but it was very good. I really enjoyed the game which we've had of it.
I mean, if they do a new Apocalypse, I hope that they keep a lot of the mechanics they've got of the current one, because I think there was a lot of backlash, unfortunately, against it, because it really moved away from base 40k and used very different mechanics. But for me, that's actually one of its real great strengths, because old Apocalypse is always about trying to take your games to 3,000, 4,000 points using the same basic rule set, and that was just unmanageable. Whereas these...
No, it doesn't work.
Whereas these sets of rules did actually make it work. And if people are interested in Apocalypse, there is a community out there which is doing more data sheets for the models that have been released since Games Workshop last updated, so you can actually get things which are as balanced as you need them to be for Apocalypse available through there.
That's been my biggest complaint, is that they just said that here's your data sheets, but then they didn't add anything new, and as an AdMech player, that's like half the codex now. So
yeah, I think they did like one or two updates and then just went silent.
And it's such a good system based on, well, feeling like it's coming from Epic, and also what they've done with Kill Team lately as well, like just completely diverge and just have it as its own game system, kind of works the other way too. And I think maybe Apocalypse was the thing, well, I guess it was Warcry really, but Apocalypse and Warcry gave them the confidence to say, actually, what if we commit to these other systems which are more suitable for smaller games? Like, let 40k Ninth be 40k Ninth, let Kill Team be Kill Team, and let Apocalypse be Apocalypse. Joseph, you've been up to much this year in our Lord 2021?
The only game I've played in over... No, wait, that's not true. The second game I've played in over a decade was this year, but it was on Tabletop Simulator, as many of us, I think, experienced that. But I did experience the absolute glee of advancing both one unit of goblins and one Mangler Squig, and the Mangler Squig moving slower than the goblins. which is the and on the other flank, another Magna Squig, outpacing everything else on the board by a factor of two. It literally moved double the inches of the next fastest moving unit in the entire game, and completely chomped a Stormcast Lord something or other. I can't remember. It was Dines' Lord something, and he got stomped on by a Mangler. But it was good fun. I've developed a great love for Mangler Squig, so I should figure out how many can I put into a single army.
I've yet to build any. I'd love one. I think that's the next thing I've... One of my upcoming... Oh, it's cheating going to my plans for next year, but I think I want to double down on Gloom Spite. So,
Mine are all troubles. Going to be converted walking houses, because that's the one that I've built so far, and the second one I'm partway through building are converted walking houses. I just need a bunch more plasticard tubes to build the legs out of.
Have you considered trying to build one out of, or like an even bigger one out of like the Lord of the Rings house? The Lake
yes,
Town house.
Yes, I have.
My favorite kit.
Very much. Oh no. I could build two out of one house. Break it in half so you can see inside the house. James, you've just made me a happy person and also occupied 6 months of my hobby time.
Yeah, because who's living inside the house?
Mostly goblins. I'll need another box of goblins to hide inside the house.
With goblins.
We'll see. We'll see. Anyway.
Let's talk about some of the releases this year. I wonder if anyone can remember what's actually come out this year. Because when it comes to a year, I don't know what I did last month when it comes to me, personally.
On our walk here, Tom suggested looking up the Sunday previews for the year. So I just did that. Just scroll through the Sunday previews. And that worked quite well.
I mean, it's amazing that you got Signal out here in tiny plastic towers.
Yeah, it is quite an isolated location. It's almost like you didn't want us to find you.
No.
There was so much this year, including things I forgot, and also stuff that I'm not even sure I saw references to in the headlines for the Sunday previews, but I know came out this year, like the Mini Guard refresh sprue, which gives the Cadians new heads and guns. Did anyone else remember that? Because I only remembered what I noticed. I didn't see it in the Sunday previews.
Wasn't that the same day as they announced the Gaunt's Ghosts box?
It might have been.
So
it might have been in the Ghost Return.
I remember it being announced, and I remember them saying it sneaking out, but they didn't say exactly when. It was just like, and then the rebox of the Cadians just was there.
A bonus. But then the two traditional classic Warhammer armies got full range refreshes, or near to full, because Vampire counts, because that's what Soulblight is. And Orcs! Space Orcs! Just got, like, new Beast Snaggers, new Squig running things, and just new Orc boys!
Yeah, I mean, with the Vampires, so my pick for release of the year was the Vampires, because they are such nice models, and Games Workshop just got a really unique take on Vampires, and I just really love them as a aesthetic, and it's very unique and very ornate and over the top, but very Warhammer. And the Vampires just really nail that aesthetic. Both the ones which were released for Underworlds, that box that came out this year, the ones that came out in the Cursed City, which is and the whole range as well, and the special edition one they released just the other week. So I really think that Undead are the way to introduce people to Warhammer and say, right, here's the Warhammer take on the Undead. Here's what they look like. Here's what we're doing here. And how to show people the Warhammer aesthetic is to go through the Undead. And because the Vampires are clearly Vampires, but also very clearly Warhammer. I just really love them. And I've got a few of them, and I just need to work out what colour to paint their armour, because I keep changing my mind.
I think that if I have to pick my one favourite release of the year, it's actually something kind of offbeat, because it's the one release that made me go, not only do I want these models, I want to start an entire new aspect to my hobby. I want the new Space Marine planes. Turns out I love a Fire Raptor, and I love a Xiphon Interceptor. They're like double the size I thought they would be.
They're chunky little beasts, aren't they?
I thought they'd be like really dinky, like about the size of a Space Marine torso. But no, they're about the size of a Space Marine. And I mentioned this to my partner and she's like, but you don't like planes. I'm like, I didn't. I do now. And I'm like, the rest of the range is like, yeah, they're nice. But these are the ones that make me go, oh, well, maybe I do want to get into Aeronautica. And I had been always like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, it sounds like the mechanics work really well. You know, they've taken some stuff from other systems that are known to work really well. And, you know, yeah, I could kind of see maybe, like, getting a bunch of Vultures and Valkyries and kind of doing, a Catachan drop force sort of thing. That could be cool. But then I see the Space Marines was like, I have plans. So many plans.
I mean, Aeronautica is one of those games that Games Workshop increasingly does now, which is great, which is, you only need half a dozen or so models to have a full force and feel that you've got everything you want. And that makes it quite viable to go, okay, I'm going to have my Space Marine planes and I'll get some Orca planes as well to fight them against. And if I want to rope someone into a game of Aeronautica, I've got two forces there ready to go.
Yeah. I do like that there's also an expansion in the, like, kinds of game you can play still within the GW world. Like, now this isn't coming out this year, I think. Isn't Dungeon Bowl strictly next year?
I think.
No, it's out now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so sudden. But also, it's a cool thing. It's like, it's a party game of dungeon crawling and American football. That's a great idea. I mean, admittedly, it's an existing great idea, but.
Yeah, it's something that's been around for a long time.
Decades.
I never thought it'd come back again. But yeah, I mean, in terms of being a surprise release, it was, I think it was released like a week or two after it was first announced. It's like, and here's Dungeon Bowl. It's like, oh, I'll come out next week. What?
The same with Warcry.
Oh yeah, that
Red Harvest came out basically the week after they officially announced it. They teased it a little bit, like saying something's coming for Warcry, but
was not
very much just like, and here it is. And what they hadn't shown was all of that terrain, which is sitting on big sprues behind me.
Yep.
So,
I mean, the terrain was a large part of why I got that box, because it's such a nice... I mean, Warcry in general is a really nice game and one I want to play more of, which we'll get to at some point in the plans for next year. But it came out as like, oh, I really do want this. And I mean, I would have bought Dungeon Bowl had they not released Warcry. How dare they? Because, of course, we had Age of Sigmar 3 this year.
We did indeed.
And Dominion. And that was Indrasta. A really nice set. Yeah.
This isn't strictly a game or event, but just being on our role models Discord, the day Indrasta was announced and seeing the reactions come in, even from people who weren't watching the stream, of just like, and that was just everyone's reaction, like, she's so cool. And then also seeing like the amazing rulebook art of her leaping into a canyon of chaos.
Yeah. And that was so strong. That was like, Indomitus had like a strong launch, mostly because it was 40k and, you know, we were excited by the idea of more Space Marines, I guess. But when they showed off those new Stormcast, and I don't know if I've gone on record saying I didn't really like Stormcast very much before, something about the proportions, something about the way they looked or whatever, but I didn't really like them before. But I did buy Dominion because all those new ones in their fancy, tall, slightly thinner armor just look absolutely incredible, and then led by Indrasta, which is just, I wonder if that is model of the year for me, possibly. I haven't even painted her yet. I haven't taken her off the sprue yet, but that's because I'm intimidated about what to do with it. So
yeah, I'm painting my Stormcast at the moment, and they are really nice models to paint, and I'm sort of doing all the base layers on all of them at the same time, and I'm just looking forward to Indrasta quite a lot.
Do you have the clock going on those ones as well to compare it to the Nighthaunt?
No, I don't actually, because I've been doing a lot of the painting for them in a social circle. So I don't. It's because I time my painting by how long the podcasts I listen to while painting are, so I don't have an actual time on them, unfortunately. I think that, because we talked earlier about how many releases we've had this year, and I think it's really quite interesting thing about, this is probably only half of what they were planning for this year originally, because there was so much disruption. Because Cursed City, I'm fairly certain that the sort of reliable rumour speculation is it was supposed to be released in about October, November 2019. Not 2019, 2020, sorry. And was then delayed to this year and pushed to be much closer to the Soulblight release. And all those Soulblight special characters, I'm almost certain, were originally supposed to be Cursed City expansions. But because of all the disruption to Cursed City and production, that just got entirely pulled. And I think there's definitely things which are in the pipeline that we'll see over the next few years, which were originally intended for this year.
But it has given us a chance to focus on things, I guess, as hobbyists. Like, you don't have to always be buying the new thing. You can be working on your own little projects. You can be finding fun 3D printers on, like, or exciting, strange indie projects and things like Turnip and Sludge and all those things coming out. Like, it's an exciting time where, if something like Games Workshop can't keep up with, like, your hobby lust, it's actually a time to, like, say, well, what can I do to keep myself entertained with all of these models? They can't be for nothing. And then start pulling it, doing your own thing almost. So I think it's really helped fuel a lot of that personally, and I think that's great.
There's also, if really they did only release 50 to 70% of what they had originally planned on releasing this year, oh my god, what would a normal 2021 have looked like in terms of hobbyist wallets, Games Workshop being able to even fit all their products into the average Warhammer store, which isn't a very big store space when you look at them. I actually think, if anything, I'm looking at the Sunday previews and going, they could probably slow down for 2022 and just, like, take it easy on everyone and just be like, okay, we'll release 75% of what we did in 2021. It will still keep people busy. And then in 2023, we'll have another. Because I'm looking, how can you possibly maintain this? Like, it's kind of like how people were a little bit worried of this, and they did actually roll back. People were a little bit worried of, oh, we had, I can't remember the order of the first two, but we had Mortarion, Magnus, and Goleman in a relatively short space of time. And people were like, oh, are they going to run out of Primarchs to release? And the answer is no, because they just stopped.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of release pace, I think we're going to see this sort of pace for the foreseeable future, because the thing to remember is that the current releases that are hitting us now are probably all things that were still designed as tail end of 2019 at the latest, mm-hmm. just because of production time and the sort of release pipeline that Games Workshop has. So we're going to, in the next couple of years, start getting to the point where their ability to sculpt stuff was much more curtailed because of not being able to actually go into the sculpting studios. So I think they can't go any faster. But this is in fact why their current competition to win a year's worth of Warhammer of every release is a threat to the people buying from the web store. They call it a competition. It's a threat. I suppose that brings us actually quite neatly onto our plans for next year. I mean, obviously, my plan is to win the competition and drown under a pile of sprues. What are people's plans for their hobby next year?
I want to finish a bunch of smaller forces, because yes, I have some Space Marines and I have Goblin Gits, which I want to expand on and build up into a proper AOS army. But I've realized that other than those two, both of which are ideas I quite love, I don't necessarily know if I want other armies, or at least I don't want to be planning those armies. So I have an idea for some trench-themed Chaos Space Marines and Cultists for a kill team. So three basically Berserkers and eight horrible trench golems. I have an idea for a Necromunda Book of the Outcast gang themed around a fallen noble house who are basically just like, they still have all the cool stuff, but they're also all either very, very old or very, very inbred because they refuse to integrate with the people around them because they're a noble house. They don't deal with scavs and scummers. And I'm going to give them all names like Augustus and Leopold.
The probably release of the year was probably the Underhive Market, to be honest.
True. It is the most playset of the year.
Yes.
Oh, and I do love the playset energy of it. That is very satisfying.
I built mine the other week. It's so good. Tiny coffee cups.
Okay, so in keeping with that, I have a really dumb idea. I want to collect a sort of black denim goth-themed Orlok gang and name them entirely out of characters from the very bad 1990s part CGI transforming vehicles TV show Vampires, the TV show about vampires who are cars, possibly starring Gary Oldman under a pseudonym. That's a real TV show, and I'm going to name all of my Orlok gangers after characters from that.
That's an incredible deep cut.
I know. I only found out of it because it got mentioned on a podcast.
not even an old fan from when it came out.
No, but the names are good. The names are very good Necromunda names. I will not spoiler them now, but you could probably look them up on Wikipedia if you're curious. But that is one of my plans for next year. I just want to have a bunch of little gangs.
Yeah, I mean, until you said about the vampires bit, I was saying, have you been reading my show notes? Because that's pretty much exactly what I was going to say about my plans for next year as well, that I just want to get into the skirmish games more. Throughout this segment, we've been talking a lot about the small-scale games, both the games, ones, games, workshop producers, and things like Sludge and Turnip. And I have armies. I quite enjoy painting them. It's very satisfying to have a complete army. But there's so many good skirmish games now, that Kill Team, Warcry, Necromunda, Underworld. They're all small projects, which I really love the models for. And I want to just take the time to actually complete a few of them next year, I think. And I haven't gone quite so far as working out which bit of random 90s culture to name them after myself. I will have to go and search for it to find one so that we can have a rollout of Necromunda all based on the 90s, as is right and proper. But there's so many nice things there. And I can think, I can try this out and try out this game, and then I've got this game. I can play it, and I think I've got all of the Warcry warbands they've released, for example, which I just want to paint up and do something with. And that always gives me an excuse to paint the terrain for it as well, which is beautiful stuff. And so I think I've been saying this for a few years now. To be fair, that this is the year I'm going to start getting more into skirmish gaming, but that is the plan once I've finished the various army projects I've got going on. I mean, I'll just quickly mention one of those army projects is, going back to the start of the podcast, I'm planning to do my speed painting again in January with some Necrons, and I have a lava-based colour scheme for them, as if they basically... Their tomb complex got slightly flooded with lava. It was a bad time for all involved, and they are now quite pissed off. So I've got a nice colour scheme for them, a sort of glowing lava out of the bodies and stuff. But beyond that, I'm not sure I'll be picking up another army. And I'll be sort of going, right, okay, here's a nice small project to do. I'll just paint a few Underworlds warbands. I'll paint a Kill Team and some Warcry. And so there's a little bit of Necromunda as a treat.
Sounds good. I think I'm going to be doing the same thing. I don't want to be buying that much more stuff, he says, unless it's more terrain. I've got so many little projects which are ones which I'm still like got that hobby viv about. I want to be still doing them, and sometimes the reason why I'm not doing them is that I'm paralyzed about which one I actually want to continue doing. I think Trolls and Trogs, etc., has really got me excited right now, so I'm definitely going to be painting more of my Gloomspike Gits, which I actually started with one of the Battle Forces last year, or the year before, technically. It's a 2019, or no, yeah, it was the 2020, one of them. Well, anyway, one of the Battle Forces, which came out at the end of last year. That's it, 2020 was last year. That's how time works.
Citation needed.
Yes. So I would love to be getting on with things like that, but also I would like to continue getting on with Dominion. I would like to just get that box painted as just like a, I got the box done and that's it, and just play the game with what came out of the box as, you know, as just a fun project. And yeah, Custodes, the new codex is coming out. I actually painted some recently and they've been sitting on my shelves as half painted for ages, and you don't have to paint that many of them, so surely should be easy. Then there's all those drawers of Space Marines I still have. Like, oh no, there's too much hobby. So I really should not be buying any more hobby. But yes, I do think I'm going to probably in the next year find some weird hobby thing like sludge or something. In fact, while we're recording, I started looking at the sludge rule set and going, ooh, maybe that's a good idea. So yeah, we'll see. I'm just going to keep on at my own pace though. I think that's one thing I'm probably going to do. There's no events to paint for. There's no reason to other, just keep going, really.
I'm going to say something very dangerous to you, James.
Uh-oh.
Joseph McCullough, the designer behind Frostgrave and Stargrave, has released a new Napoleonic dark fantasy skirmish game called The Silver Bayonet about teams of monster hunters hunting down monsters in the French and German forests of a dark fantastical Napoleonic war.
God damn it.
Why would you do this to me?
It's called The Silver Bayonet. It looks brilliant. It's basically, it's sludge meets one of those cool asymmetric shooters that were all the fad about 6 years ago and none of them quite took off. Or no, it's worse. It's sludge meets Hunt Showdown.
Ooh, you monster. Right. With that, I'm going to have to ask you to leave the property.
There's wolves out here.
Why, those were some very handsome opinions which we just had there. The rest of us also caught up with other members of our community. So I'm going to hand straight over to Drew. Who did you have a catch up with earlier this week?
So the first chat I had with folks was, it was just myself and John, who's written quite a few articles for the site, so but hadn't been on the pod before, so it's familiar from the writing but not as a familiar voice. So yeah, me and John had a catch up, much like you did, James, where we sort of went through how the year had been for us. Joining me today is John, who is a new voice to the podcast, but has contributed quite a lot to the Tiny Plastic People website, so you should be familiar with his work, if not his voice. Hello, John.
Hello, Drew. I'm John, and since this is my intro, then a bit background. So I started gaming in the 90s when I was a teenager, like many people, kind of left the hobby for a bit and got back into it, I think, about a year after AOS was released, ostensibly under the pretense that it was for my son, and then over the course of years I've given up that pretense now.
It's a good excuse.
I kept on over it. I mean, to be honest, I keep on trying, and yesterday he did finally build his Snotling Blood Bowl team that I got him in about March, so yeah, there's not no interest, but yeah.
less than your interest.
Less, I mean, than mine. Yeah.
It's quite a good excuse, because I always find that when I'm talking to people about the hobby and stuff, is that invariably it's, you know, if the people who are not engaged in the hobby themselves, is that they say, oh, my kid does that, or the worst one is, I think, is my kid used to do that, and you're like, well, yes, I'm late 30s and I still do it, so.
Yeah, I've discovered that he's started sharing my Instagram account with his friends now as well. So maybe, I don't know whether that's a good or bad thing, but yeah, it's certainly something.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I mean, I look forward to the idea that sort of my siblings who have children, is that when their children become old enough to get into Warhammer, is that Christmas and birthday presents will suddenly become an awful lot easier to choose. Whereas, you know, these days, having to know about things is, makes it far harder. So yeah, if you're already there, that sounds excellent.
That's it.
We're recording on a Sunday afternoon, so I don't have any festive mulled wine or, you know, eggnog. Disappointingly, I should have been prepared and got some mince pies, but if we want to sort of try and capture some of the Christmas spirit or New Year's spirit, I think we're going to have a bit of a look back at the year and things that were sort of stood out to us in the hobby and, what sort of our high points were. Do you want to sort of start then, John, just from a sort of personal point of view, what was your painting, modelling, hobby highlight of the year?
Yeah, so it's actually something that I only finished a week or two back, actually. So fairly recent in my mind, but when I was thinking through what I'd done this year and what I was proudest of, it's probably that. So it was my first sort of big conversion. So with the new Warcry release with the spider people, I was quite enamoured of that idea.
Mm-hmm.
I had some spare Mutalith Vortex Beast bits, and I had the random thought of, I wonder whether I could put those onto an Arachnorot spider somehow. So it's the first time I've really sort of just bought a kit just to splice up to use with the Arachnorok. I've got lots of little tiny goblin archers now as well hanging around, which I'm sure I'll find are useful. Very scary moments of chopping a lot of plastic off and hoping to God that everything worked size-wise. And it seemed to do. Before I did any soaring, I was holding pieces next to each other and hoping and trying to work it out. And didn't take too much green stuff either on holes. And then I think I've done a reasonable paint job on it. So I think, including a bit of OSL blown up from the ground on the base. So for a number of reasons of the conversion side, I think that's my proudest moment. On the painting side, I think it's one of my best minis this year as well. So for all those reasons, really, I think that's my hobby highlight.
Yeah, I remember seeing some pictures of it. It looks, I think it's always a good sign where the conversion looks like it came as a kit, as it were, you know, like it's all one thing together. And that certainly has that kind of, I mean, as much as a kind of freaky spider beast can look, sort of like it all belongs together.
It's quite horrific looking, actually. When I thought it through, it was like, oh, yeah, it's going to look disgusting. And I'm not necessarily usually doing that with my models, but yeah, why not?
It's a bit of inspiration, actually, for something I'm going to talk about later. But I think the Mutalist kit is quite an interesting kit, and I don't know, maybe other people do see it more, but it's certainly not something that I see built or played with quite a lot. Certainly it is of an interesting, diverse section of bits.
Yeah, so, and I had a bit of an, because I bought one in the year, obviously it's a dual kit with a slaughter brute, and unfortunately I got one of the sprues instead of both sprues, so I got sent a whole extra box, so I had all these extra Mutalith parts effectively, which is why I had it. But equally, what I decided at the time was to just try and magnetize the heads and the various bits so that I could run it as Eva, and tried to paint it, and I just hated it. I absolutely hated it. I couldn't get the paint job right to work with all the different bits and the two styles of miniature.
Yeah,
I was never really happy. And the kit itself, the main slaughter brute base, Mutalith base. So actually, when I was painting it, I wasn't really keen on actually how it presented itself as a model. So doing something like this, I'm actually far happier with the Mutalith that I've got now, that I can run that one. And I'll probably at some point just strip the slaughter brute, paint it as a slaughter brute, so I can at least be happier that it matches that, and just leave it as the slaughter brute. So
yeah. And it fits quite well into forces you've already got then. So it's not just a sort of standalone monster for Warcry.
Primarily I've got Chaos AOS stuff. So I've got primarily Slave to Darkness and Khorne and a little bit of Zench stuff. So I can fit it into Slaves to Darkness or the Zench side really easily.
It's definitely impressive. What we'll have to do is dig out your Instagram page for it, and I'm going to make sure that's in the show notes. So I think it's quite a good thing to see.
I was just going to ask you, what was yours? Hobby highlight?
I Well, we were just talking before we started recording that it's hard to remember, particularly with years like they have been. Scanning back through Instagram, I haven't painted that much, or certainly not that much compared to what I normally do. And I was trying to think then. I've done some Titanica stuff, which I quite liked. It was a sort of different scheme to my usual Titanica stuff, and it is sort of quite bold and attractive. But I think if I was going to have to say sort of as a highlight, like you say, you know, combined all the different potential ways to score the model, is it's probably the... Is it the Terrorgeist? I keep calling it sort of just a dragon. But for the vampires, Age of Sigmar vampires.
It's absolutely amazing. The way you've done the lighting on that model is absolutely fantastic. It just looks so menacing to... And there's such an evil presence about it, sort of flowing up from the ground. It's incredible.
It's very kind to say, thank you. Yes, it's certainly probably the most complicated thing I've done from a lighting point of view. And as you know, for those who don't know the Terrorgeist kit, it's kind of like a skeletal dragon that's sort of squatting, kind of like a giant bat on all fours. So it's quite complicated from a sort of model point of view. It's quite like a cage almost to try and get in and paint around. And I decided that I wanted... I'm doing my entire sort of vampire force as this sort of force at night, but to give them some interest, there's this sort of glowing pink lighting coming off the ground for all of them. It's vaguely inspired by the Total War games, the Warhammer Total War games, where the vampires have that kind of corruption they spread into the land. So the idea that the vampires themselves are kind of poisoning the land, so these sort of weird pink glowing bits, which just conveniently mean that I can put fancy lighting on the models. And it was, yeah, certainly a challenge to paint, both the scheme that I chose, but also the model that I chose it for, because it is so spindly and like a kind of odd cage.
Was there lots of sort of reaching a dry brush through to try and do some OSL on the inside of the cage? Or
yes, I left... I think I super glued the wings on when I did all my initial priming, and they did all the initial main work with the wings on. And then because they're super glued, I could crack them off, and then it's only sat on its back legs, and I had a chance to get in and start painting it up properly. And then I put the wings back on, and then finish the final stages there. And I'd also kind of copied this scheme on the wings, and I can't remember the woman's name. She's a Polish painter, and she's very good. And if I could remember her name, I'd probably make a terrible job pronouncing it. But she does these very striking kind of dragons and demons with a kind of... It's almost like a sort of cellular pattern across the wings. And... that was what I was trying to sort of replicate, and I don't know, it was an added level of complexity, which I don't think I'll do it on any of the other vampires, certainly.
But it's good to try stuff like that and push it, isn't it?
It is,
and particularly
yeah.
Your showcase model, like your Terrorgeist is, you know, it's... Going that extra mile just makes it that much more special when it's done.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, like you say, it's a big model, and I don't really want to do that much lighting on a sort of horde of sort of skeletons and things. So if I can have them quite muted, and then yeah, the lighting show up for the force on the big models, it hopefully will work. But what it has done is, it took me, I think, a reasonably intensive 2 months, maybe 3 months to paint it, and. It kind of sort of torpedoed the rest of my vampire army, because I was like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. It's like, it's too... Because I built quite a complicated base for, I can't remember her name. Is it Lukavai? The dragon vampire. The sort of new dragon vampire things they have, which is, like, you know, half dragon, half vampire.
Yeah, I can't remember the name. Yeah. The weird centaur things.
Yes, that's the one. So I've modelled her up, and I spent a lot of time green stuffing candles and things. So I've given her quite a kind of a Bloodborne-y style base, because she's perched on a ruin anyway. And then I built kind of a hill for her to stand on. And now I just look at it and I'm like, oh, it's going to be awful to paint, and I just don't feel like I want to, because not only has it got pink underlighting to match the rest of the army, but I've now put a load of different candles on it, so it's like...
They don't all have to be lit.
No, and I suppose not. She sat on my mantelpiece, just sort of hiding away from my paint table these days, because... I want to paint, and obviously it's the height. That's the other sort of center point for that army. But it's intimidating myself with the scheme that I'd set up. So yes, we'll see.
One day, you'll just go, do you know what? I'm taking it down. I'm going to get started, and that'll be it.
That's it. It's what I need to do. Yeah. And just once you get going, and then in 3 months' time, I might have finished it. So
well, I look forward to seeing some photos as it gets done, or when it's done. Yes, and you post any work in progress. But yeah, that'll be fantastic.
Hopefully be it. And get Ashley. Maybe I should just start that this afternoon.
Just get some base paints down. Yeah.
So it's been a funny year for actually playing games, for meeting human beings, but. What would you have you had any game or event highlights of the year? Potentially, I suppose it's things that you haven't attended and stuff you've just seen online, because obviously a lot of stuff has moved online these years.
Yeah, I haven't been to any events. I've played a few games with family and local friends, but so when I was thinking about this, I actually think it was Warhammer Day that I'd class as my big game event highlight of the year. Mm-hmm. When I was thinking about it through, it was quite a strange one. I think normally, because I'm not a 40k player, I've dipped into Kill Team this year, and I've just bought an Aeronautica Imperialis set, and I've got a few issues of Imperium, so I'm beginning to sort of head into that direction, but I'm not generally a 40k player. So a lot of the times when there's been these big events in the past, a good chunk of it hasn't necessarily been as relevant to me. But I think the Warhammer Day this year, I think there was the really cool Vampire Lady that they announced as a special thing, miniature for the event a couple of weeks before.
Yeah,
the one which then you could do a baby dragon, which everyone seemed to want to do. So, and even though I haven't got any vampires, it was like, ooh, yes, that looks like a fun model to get. I have to admit, there's been a couple of vampires this year that inspired. And then, obviously, we start with the silhouettes, and the silhouettes look like some of them looked quite interesting, and we knew that the war cry was coming because there'd been some announcements and things like that. And then, you know, to me, it was quite a short event, unlike some of the other reveals where it's at the end of a day, over a weekend. We just had sort of an hour and a half solid of just reveal. And most of those reveals were really brilliant. There was something for everyone, I think. But particularly for me, I was quite excited by quite a few things. So, not as bothered about Shadow Throne, but loved the special miniatures for it, that Gene Cena Cultist. There was that new Maggotkin Sorcerer, and then I'd seen the Maggotkin, the pretty fly for the Blight guy. I can't remember who made that joke first, but yeah. Dungeon Bowl is a surprise thing, which just I haven't bought it yet because I've been buying a lot lately, so need to save some funds, but absolutely that'll be something for next year. The Warcry reveal, that terrain, that was the first time we saw all the terrain that was coming with it, that mining set. Was
that then? I totally lost track of time. Yeah, that was impressive, yes.
So I was already like looking through going, oh my god, look at that terrain, those mining sets. And I've got that, I've based all the terrain. I haven't, I've done a couple of pieces, but I haven't managed to finish very much of it. But it is, it's a huge amount of stuff in that box. It's far more generous than the original starter set. I mean, obviously you're paying a bit more than that was, but and then there was the Ogre Pirate, and there was Jagatai Khan for Horus Heresy. And then there was announcement for the Red Gobbo Christmas miniature. There was just, everything was just brilliant reveals. And like I say, I think the way that they did it, just the short, here's a special thing, we've got special miniatures, I thought they did quite a good, really good job. So it was a very exciting sort of day. So yeah, that was my event, I think.
It was impressive. I hadn't realised that it was, that so much had come out in that day until you'd said it. And I do remember now. Yeah, it was quite quite concentrated, really. It was a sort of a lot of stuff for a lot of different systems. And I don't remember Dungeon Bowl at all. But I mean, people like to try and predict what GW are coming out with and stuff, and then they can continually come out with stuff that is just so, I don't know, weird and wonderful that you're just like, oh yeah, it's a game from the mid-90s that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like Man of War came back now or something. It's sort of it really could be anything.
Yeah, tiny ships with little paper sails. There we go. Yeah,
good old days.
What about yourself, Drew? What was your hobby highlight event?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I have an in-person one, so obviously I've. Like I think like everyone, I've not got a lot of games in this year. But what I did spend a lot of lockdown doing was kind of getting into Horus Heresy. And I started a Dark Angel army from scratch, basically, and sort of just watched a lot of battle reports on Horus Heresy and things, and sort of played a couple of test games with myself. And then... I think it might have been talked about on one of the pods. Oh, no, we talked about it on one of the pods. We did an entire Horus Heresy special pod based off the back of it. But a few of us met up at Warhammer World and got to play sort of Horus Heresy. You know, people like me who'd also picked up or dropped into Horus Heresy during the lockdown got to meet up and just, yeah, got some Heresy done. And I think it might have been on the Sunday of that weekend where I played... other pod host Rich, and it was his Iron Warriors versus my Dark Angels, and it kind of felt like a kind of completion of the sort of, I don't want to say completion of the painting journey, because half of my stuff wasn't painted by that point, but a completion of the journey of getting into Heresy, really. And although I'd played some games earlier in the day or earlier in the weekend, they'd very much been learning games, and that game felt like we were both playing a full game. It was very close, and we were doing the things that our respective armies should be doing. I don't know. It's games like that I really kind of live for. I think where, you know, everything just feels like the mind's eye picture. I suppose, you know, like a sort of Siege of Terror book where there's Marines and Terminators, and you've got Land Raiders disgorging squads into sort of brutal fire, and then charging home and things. And it just felt right, and it felt like that, and really sold Heresy on me as well, I suppose. So yeah, I think that was probably my high point. And then, you know, as a close second, we had another meetup with the sort of Role Models community in Bathgate later on in the year, middle of November, and we had quite a big sort of Heresy day of that as well. And that again was just a really good feeling of, I don't know, I like Heresy now. It's like, you know, I thought I would do when I started painting it up, but then it's weird to kind of commit to an army project without ever having played the game, and then to find that it is this sort of very interesting rule set. I mean, it's not necessarily the tightest rule set in the world, but I mean, I'm going to go off into a Heresy tangent, which is, just go and listen to the Heresy podcast instead. So yes, I'll finish there and just say, yeah, that game with Rich, I think, was my game of the year, and then a close second, the big Heresy sort of three aside or whatever it was that we had in Bathgate with the Role Models community. It was good times.
Excellent. It's it looks really sort of. I mean, the pictures from the Warhammer World one, particularly with all the scenery and the background, it was really evocative. And we were talking just before the pod, I really like in it keeping the destroyed vehicles in place in situ. It makes it look like it's a battlefield. I know some people do like cotton wool and stuff to smoke and things like that, and it just yeah, it just adds another layer to it that the other systems don't have in terms of that. And I think, like you say, it helps root you into the game, or the appearance from the outside is it's a really nice mechanic to root you into it in your mind.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's certainly what I used to do a lot when I used to play games and things, you know, back in second edition and stuff. And I think in second the vehicles might have stayed in too, but you know, the idea that you are affecting the battlefield, and it's very narrative, I suppose, is the way of looking at it. So yes, yeah, no, it was very nice sort of combination of everything there. We've kind of touched on this a bit, maybe in your kind of highlights of the year, but obviously we've had quite a lot of things teased this year, and also quite a lot of releases this year. Would you say has anything really stood out for you? What's your favourite release?
Yeah, so I actually got it last week. And built it, so that's probably where I've cemented this thought of my favourite release from the year. So there's been an awful lot, but also with the nature of the world issue, I think there's been quite a long lead time sometimes between things being announced and actually being available, and so some of the stuff that was revealed halfway through the year is only just sort of becoming out now, which is very strange. But and I'm going to pronounce this wrong because it's an impronounceable name, but I'm going with the Blood Bowl Skylar Anfingrim model.
Sounds like a good attempt at pronouncing it.
Well, yeah, until someone, you know, listens to it in a Black Library audiobook or something and it's completely off, but yeah. And the reason why it's obviously it's a Forgewood model, so it's resin, which I do hate working with resin. I don't like. Super glue sticks incredibly well to your fingers and not to the miniatures and holding things in place. But the reason why I think it's my favourite miniature for the year is because I think it epitomises Blood Bowl and probably a lot of GW in the fact that you've got this incredibly kinetic ball of muscle and sinew with arms and legs poking out in all different directions, barely touching the ground. It's just balanced on one hand and the tip of a tail. And it's obviously a monstrous figure with claws and horns and all sorts and big teeth. It's going to do some damage, so it's the grim side of the hobby. And then it's wearing football shorts, football socks, and it's pushing down on this elf. So that this elf has got these big bulging cheeks with all the air, all the wind being knocked out of it in just the level of silliness that is Blood Bowl, quite frankly. And whereas a lot of the Blood Bowl miniatures, snotlings sort of aside, but a lot of them are very po-faced and the silliness is in the game. I think there's a lot of inherent silliness in that model, which just symbolises the game to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'd forgotten about the elf being squashed. It's yeah, you're right. It's a very kind of strange model in some ways, but it really does capture that kind of cartoonishness, I suppose, of the sort of Blood Bowl. Really kind of over the top details, and yeah, like you say, it's a giant hell demon, but it's still got its football gear on.
Yeah, and then I mean, the two things which really amazed me when I got it was one, that elf head is a separate part, so you could just mount it on a random model. That'd be hilarious for a conversion opportunity. And then the other thing is, so Blood Bowl, if people don't know, you get special slaughter bases, even though quite a lot of the figures now don't fit into the slots anymore, and they all have a hole for the ball. And usually with the big guy figures, you get a larger base, but you can drill through the slots for where the ball can go, and you can pick. And this one, the base that arrives is just your standard GW base. There's no pretense that this character is going anywhere near the ball other than to knock it out of someone else's hand. He's not going to score a touchdown. He's just here for the violence. And it was just a nice little touch. Plus, then I don't have to fill the base, fill the slot hole. Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Yeah. What about you, Drew? What was your release of the year?
I struggle to remember what came out this year. Thinking about it now, and maybe to have the pretense that we're not solely a Games Workshop podcast, I think Infamy by the Two Fat Lardies came out at the start of the year. If it didn't come out at the start of the year, it was just the back end of last year. And that's their Roman rule set. And I picked it up around the summer, I think. And I have a sort of difficult relationship with historicals. I kind of like some elements of them, but I do feel a bit squeamish, I suppose, about playing the real world aspect of it, with a lot of sides, you know, involved in various historical games. But Romans certainly are far enough back in time that they're just like fantasy creatures, you know. And I don't, you know, 2,000 years is long enough for me to lose my squeamishness. So it's a historical game. It's very kind of rank and sort of flank to some degree, but it's very simple compared to a lot of historical games. So I kind of got quite keen on that. And it's miniature agnostic, really. So you can play at any scale that you want within limits. So I've picked that up at 15 mil, or I've bought the rules and I've bought separate 15 mil models to go with it. And it's quite nice to just look at terrain on the 15 mil scale and look at armies on a 15 mil scale. So I think that's certainly, I'd have to say, a highlight, as in it's somewhere that I think I might spend more of my hobby time these days.
No, I was going to just ask, are you Romans, or are you primarily be Barbarians, or are you going to
flip between them, I think, is the idea. And the advantage of being 15 mil is that you can buy, it's not a huge army game. It's not like some historicals where you're recreating the entire Battle of Waterloo or anything. It's you don't need that many units, but I bought in metal, I bought 15 mil Barbarians and 15 mil Romans, and it was like £100 for the entire army for both sides. And the other thing is, I don't know anyone else who plays Infamy, so it made a sense to buy both armies, and then I can, you know, people can just play with me, or I can trick people into playing with me.
Yeah. Is it, because I've not heard of it at all, so I'm just looking at it now. So, forces around 50 figures. So, is it sort of 2-3 hour game, is it? Or
yeah, it can be very short. The Two Fat Lardies, when they do their games, all have a kind of common design element, which is that they're very command focused, and your officers on the table matter a lot, and force morale matters a lot. So it isn't just individual unit morale, it's the morale of your forces. And quite often the games finish not by destroying the opponent, it's by routing them as an army. So if you go very aggressive very early, they can be very short games if they go wrong for you. And it's one of the interesting things about Infamy, more so than any of the other games that they've released, is that Infamy is very asymmetric on the play style. That Romans are very, very effective soldiers. They are very resilient, and they can react, literally break the game turn and react to enemy attacks because of their discipline. Whereas Barbarians play in a very flexible way, and they don't deploy normally. They deploy from ambush points, and they control the terrain, and they're relying on really singling the Romans out, trying to break units off and sort of harry and skirmish to win there. So it's very different to anything else I play. And yeah, like you say, the length of the games is about 2-3 hours, but it can be very much on the short side of that, or very much on the long side of that, depending on how cagey you want to be. And one of the other things with it is that you have uncertain control. It isn't like a, you know, Games Workshop war game where you're like, oh, well, I'll just move all my units. All the Two Fat Lardies games, you have control uncertainty. So you, in this one, in some of the other ones, it's dice based. In this one particularly, it's card based, and you deal out the unit activations from a deck of cards. So the Romans might get to activate 3 units, and the barbarians might get to activate just 1 in a turn. And the number of the unit which activates is defined by the cards that are dealt out. So you might want to ambush with your, you know, barbarian leader with his elite troops, but if his number doesn't come up, you don't get the chance to do that.
Oh, no. I feel like I would always be pulling the wrong cards out of the deck if I was playing that. It sounds like, sorry, again, I'm just looking. It says it's like the first volume in a series of 3 parts covering different bits of Rome's wars. So some expansions and hopefully some interesting new dynamics with the different armies that you'll be able to field against them.
It's certainly all, in the core book, it's all the Northern European stuff. So I've built my army as Britons, who are quite different from the other sort of Northern European armies. And obviously Romans fought, well, everyone who existed at that time in the kind of, you know, any direction that you can go from Rome. So I could certainly imagine there's plenty of room for expansion in a, well, they've gone north, so in a south, east and west direction. And then that was the other release I really liked. I can't remember if both of them came out this year, but it's the big Warmaster Titans that came out for Satanicus. The Iconoclast certainly came out this year. And they're just huge, ridiculous robots. And I'm totally on board with that. And the idea as well of the Iconoclast, which is like a close combat, huge, ridiculous robot, is my ideal for impracticality.
I was very big into Epic as a teenager. That was my main game, and the Warlord Titans in that were, what, about 10 centimetres tall? These are huge compared to that.
Likewise, I was a big Epic kid. They're just massive now. And then the detail is so good. It's like I've got the old Epic stuff kicking around somewhere, and it's like, not that I'd use the models in Titanicus, but I've considered using them for basing and things. But they just look so different, you know, style of detail and things in the old metal. It's just so impressive what they could do now. And the idea that if you could show them to yourself back in the 90s, it would just blow your mind what was possible.
All those Titans, they give me major nostalgia, and I do think about it, and then I go, no, I don't need another system. I don't need another system.
So, you know, as we come to the end of the year, I don't know if you're someone who plans ahead or someone who just dives in, but what are you thinking for 2022? You have anything?
sort of. So I realised how many work-in-progress models I've got at the moment. Keep on getting distracted, so I'll half finish a model and then, or a unit, and then something else will come up that I need to paint quickly or just get more inspired by. So I've got close to 100, I think, at the moment, where I've painted to various degrees, some of which I've painted that long ago now, I'd probably just want to strip them and start again rather than try and finish off a less good paint job than I can do now. So certainly a chunk of the year I need to finish stuff that I've got, basically. But apart from that, I'm sort of eyeing up something else in AOS. I'd like, if Chorfs did get revealed, Demon Engines. I did quite like the Demon Engine aesthetic. I've almost bought a couple of 40k Demon Engine stuff just to paint anyway, and then sort of steered away going, no, it's not quite what you're after, and you're not, you wouldn't use it. But if they don't come soon, I'll probably dip into there and just get a couple of models just to paint. Or the Shadow Elves, if they come out, it might be quite nice. But if we get to the middle of the year and there's no sort of sniff of either of those, and I've cleared a chunk of my backlog, then it's probably going to be something Troggy Gittish. Because I've really enjoyed, I've got a Gitz Warband for Warcry. They're overpowered in Warcry, so I don't tend to play with them anymore, but they've been really fun to paint. And I got a little Goblin Fanatic, which I think is probably my favourite model that I've ever, in terms of painting it. So, yeah, possibly go down to some Gitz.
I do like gits, certainly. They are a good character for Force again, I suppose. It's like you're talking about stuff before with Blood Bowl. It's like gits have a lot of personality in their models.
Yeah, yeah. And in a similar vein, there's the Snotling Warband, Snotling Blood Bowl team. It's just, they're so happy. They're just so happy. One's got a frying pan just on a pump wagon with a big grin on his face. One's about to throw a fungus with a big grin on his face. And you know that painting them will make you happy as well, because they're very simplistic miniatures. You don't have to do a lot, but you can add a lot of colour and just do something easy and get a little finished goblin that will look fantastic. So, yeah.
Yes. No, exactly. For me, I have a lot of projects on the go, and I do enjoy dipping in and out of things, but I think certainly as a plan on paper that I have decided to commit to, and whether this survives because of contact with the hobby table, I don't know, but it could have almost, you know, to go full circle, is a three key big weird demon things in a Mutalith something beast, certainly. I want to do a Ruinstorm demon army for Heresy. I'd like an evil army, a traitor army, evil being a bit subjective in Heresy, that everyone's awful, but undisputably the baddies by a factor of 10 army, certainly on something to be on side with Horus. And I like Word Bearers, and I like Sons of Horus, but having painted a lot of power armor already, I'm thinking Ruinstorm Demons is the way I want to go. And I don't know how much you know about the Ruinstorm Demons in Heresy, but they're very much not 40k demons. It expressly says there are, you know, there's no gods. It's all, because in the Heresy, no one knew what the warp was. They didn't understand demons, and they aren't defined in a kind of definitive way. There's hints of the forces that they belong to, and the sort of the different godly allegiances, but they aren't defined. And what the actual army says is, here are the base sizes. Whatever you want can go on those bases, and the stats are entirely flexible. Well, the stats aren't entirely flexible. The loadouts per thing are entirely flexible, and you just build your own army. So it's encouraging that it is all kind of converted and kit bashed and weird.
Wow. I've seen some of the Forgeworld Runestone Demon models, which I thought were really interesting. I have to say, I thought they were corn related when I saw those, so maybe it's those.
There's three brutes, which are the kind of middleweight demons, bodyguards of the bigger demons, but yeah, they're the only ones that actually are identified, as it were. But no, they don't have keyword corn or anything. You can run them as whatever you like.
So it's a choose your own gribble monster, aren't
we? Exactly, yeah. There's definitely going to be a Mutalith something in there. I've started doing one test model on that to see if I had a scheme that worked, because I didn't want to do a god based scheme, and obviously, you know, certain colors are very much loaded in the sort of the lore, as it were. So I wanted something to look different. I want to try something pale, so I've started doing that. I can't remember what his name is or its name is, but the sort of Korn's favorite doggo, the three headed one.
I've got him. I can see him. I've got mine just up in my sight, but I can't remember his name. It begins with K.
So I filled in the corn symbols and I painted it up as a test model. But I have sat next to my hobby desk is a Bellicor.
Yes.
So I'm going to do a big centerpiece Heresy Bellicor conversion. I'll probably change the head, and I think everything else I'm going to leave as is.
I mean, it was a close contender for me for my hobby project for the year, because I really enjoyed painting that model. I'd only recently painted the old one at the back end of last year, and then he gets announced. It's like, oh, just done him. But yeah, it's a fantastic model. That I can see that the nature of him being unaligned in effect. It's 20 of the gods would fit with that idea, and he's very bristling out of his armor in places. I think that would look cool. So, I get the feeling from what you said before that the Runestone plays extremely differently to all the other sort of legion armies. So, in Horus Heresy, so it's a different way to play.
Yes,
the game.
Very much so. You know, they are deliberately very weird and wonderful, and they have certain things that I really like. Is that depending on how you choose your allegiances, or there's some nominally god allegiances, I suppose, but they're not definitively them. You set that for your army, and it affects what abilities you can take and things. But what it also says is that you can just change the objectives of missions, and if you take the violence based one, you can say, "Oh, well, what mission are we playing? Oh, I'm not interested in playing that. The mission I'm playing is just killing stuff. And as long as things die in close combat, it scores me victory points. I don't care who's dying, as long as someone is dying." And I like sort of asymmetric play in armies. I think any game where you're able to sort of choose the objectives to some degree about what you want to do always feels very kind of interestingly themey to me. So yeah, the option just to be like, yeah, we're demons, we don't follow the rules, we do a load of weird stuff, and you might want to guard this supply dump, but us, we just want to be freaky weirdos is something I yeah, totally want to explore and play with.
Yeah, a bit of synergy there with the infamy with the two different, very different play styles as well.
Yeah,
I do like that when you're almost playing a completely different game to your opponent, and you're both trying to sort of interfere but do your own thing. Very different to just two people fighting over the same objective.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It always seems a bit weird when you have games where it's, yeah, like you say, especially if you've got a particularly flavoursome force, so you're just like, why would my, you know, I don't know, corn blood bastards want to, you know, defend three random points on the battlefield? Surely they just want to kill everyone. It's like, and the
yeah, and when the rules support the playstyle, supports the way that the models sound like they should play, it all comes together nicely, like you say. Other than the dissonance when, well, maybe my corn forces, but I'm going to hang back behind this building, cowering and shooting, rather than running forward, just because that would win me the game. Not interested in that myself.
No, it's...
Charge that forward.
Play for theme. Excellent. Oh, well, I think that's a good selection of stuff, either from the year and then into next year. I'd like to say thank you for joining me today, John. It was a good chance to talk through your highlights.
No, thank you for having me, Drew.
Where can we find you if we want to see more of your projects?
My very slowly projects and not many work in progress. Instagram, I'm wham_badger, and on Twitter, I'm @badgerwham.
Excellent. Well, people can check out there and see your freaky spider things and all your terrain projects and work you've been doing with Warcry. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you. It's good to speak. And good luck with all the projects in the new year.
Thank you, Drew. And good luck to your Runestone. Thank you.
I think it was sort of interesting and sort of telling from there, from what we'd been talking about, that there was a sort of a shift in the back end of the year where we actually got to sort of play games in person and sort of meet up. And I know for a fact that I've talked about Rich in the section that he hasn't heard, so I can make it
the glory of wraparound podcasts.
Yes. Exactly. But I was certainly talking about, actually all of us were there at Warhammer World for the Horus Heresy games that we had. And that was a nice point to see human beings face to face, but also play games. And, you know, it may be kind of live what we like to talk about in the podcast, which is always this sort of thing that we're very much for, sort of demonstrating, I suppose, and inspiring certain types of games, and, or, you know, playing games how you want to play them and things.
Have it your way.
Yes. The three or other ways of playing.
Three or possibly more.
It was nice to kind of start to feel, and we obviously do quite a lot with the role models community as well, which, you know, are where we all met. And we had a sort of meet up with them at the end of the year, but that was again a nice chance to meet a sort of very diverse section of people, and yeah, it's sort of playing the games that we want to play in the style we want to play them, which is quite varied. And it's a chance to do sort of different things with different people. And I suppose is, you know, how we would like Tiny Plastic People to be, is, you know, it's a chance for lots of voices to come together and a big old cooking pot and make up something sort of more interesting, yeah, than the sort of sole ingredients.
Exactly. It was like a real highlight of the year to actually be able to get together with essentially our big hobby family and play some games. That was really lovely. And probably, like, in a year where I could travel very much, that was probably one, the most amount of travel I did for one thing, and was a really nice time. So, yeah, as we career into Christmas.
Yeah, it's true. It seems like a distant memory again now, doesn't it?
It does. It feels like it was ages ago. It was only last month, wasn't it? Was it last month?
Yeah, it was November.
Middle of November, yeah.
So literally like a month ago, probably.
I have to wait for Google to remind me of what happened last month, so.
Yeah. We'll just wait for the next what happened on this day last year to roll around.
Yeah. I'm already surprised at things which are appearing there.
Okay, so thanks for joining us for part one of the Tiny Plastic People festive wrap-up. Our Santa sack is burgeoning with opinions and thoughts and takes from the last year, so much so we've had to split this into two parts. Join us again next time, where we'll be bringing the sleigh. No, this don't start metaphors before you've thought about where they're going.
Bring the sleigh.
Bring the sleigh to the station.
The harbour.
Why would you bring a sleigh to the harbour?
Exactly. Okay. Try that again.
No, leave it. It's fine. The sleigh is in the harbour. We don't know why
sinking.
There's a sleigh there.
It's sinking. It's sinking. Float.
The reindeer. They're drowning. Why would you kill Santa like this? Dear. So close.
It's my plan.
I can see the glowing red nose just drifting off under the water like the end of Titanic.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again in the next part for even more gifts down your chimney. Thanks, Drew. Thanks,
Audio
James.
Gifts.
Cheerio.